Well, as the song says, here we are again. It's the Ivan and James Martin podcast. Is that right?
That's right.
James here to keep me right, as usual. And our guest today is one of the all-time greats, a guy who is not only an Olympian, he has also had a successful time at the Commonwealth Games, a glittering amateur career, and then just to show that he could do it with the big boys as well, turned pro and had, by my estimation, a 13-year career during which, not content with the British title, he went on to win a European title. And not content with that, he, of course, was a world super middleweight boxing champion. And as they used to say at all the big fights when he was announced, Brian McGee. What do you think, James?
I think that's what an entrance to a special guest.
Yes, isn't it? It's good to see him here, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yes.
I guess probably the best announcement I've ever had. Rather than getting into the ring at any time.
Talking about getting into the ring, actually, and this applies to boxers in general, they always are very careful about what they go into the ring to. For some of them, they use a particular bit of music, they win, and from then on, oh no, that's good luck charm. Yeah. Others, just music they like or whatever. So yourself, you were no stranger to a bit of AC/DC, which was big for me.
Yeah.
But how did you go about choosing?
You know what, that was one of my favourite parts, picking the song. It's kind of all due to the outfit, you know what I mean? But your colours, your shorts and what have you. But kind of what was good and what you were into. What for me, mostly is what I was training to at the time for certain fights. What you were training to in the mornings, what you had playing in the gym. That kind of dictated what you, oh, I like that song and then got you going, you know what I mean? But and you kind of, I tried to stay away from Rocky. Rocky was a real temptation to get the Rocky song on, but everybody had done it. So for a while I went down the stage of AC/DC, but I've had a ring from Queen to all sorts. I think the worst one, I think one time was the fight in the Ulster Hall. This is before I did the AC/DC number. In fact, when he wanted to do, tell my mum when the girls come home or something like that. He wanted me to go into that door thinking I'll get the crowd going wild. This is before the time of Street Carline and all.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was probably a good idea, but it just wasn't for me. So I went back in black.
Yes. Was that the one where you were the Matrix?
That's it. Yeah, that was the first time, in Ulster Hall.
Yeah.
The Matrix coat and the sunglasses. I got a bit of stick actually at the start because my friends, like they were kind of saying to me, you know, you look like Father Ted, get in the ring just to hit the shades because it was kind of, you're pretty white collar on you. The Matrix coat was like something a priest would wear. But at the time it was pretty cool, you know, still have it hanging up in the house.
John Rogers was Van Morrison's right hand man for years,
right.
And sadly passed there not that long ago. But John Rooney, known to one and all as JR, right? When you got into the ring that night, you told me afterwards that he was not in a priest-like mood, was he?
Oh, it was never. I think at the time, it was like, because that was my first time I'd be topping the bill for myself as a professional, and I hadn't, I don't think I had any titles at the time, not too sure. Might have had an IBO Intercontinental or something, but it was kind of sold out. It was kind of, I think the Ulster Hall had said it was the biggest sold-out boxing show to date they had, and the reception was, because it was the first time, I think JR and Pat were a bit nervous, thinking, I hope this goes well. But the reception I got walking in the ring, it was deafening. And JR thought this was amazing. You know, and as you, I was saying, once you get in the ring, I'm getting in, the glasses on, the coat on, to try to do a bit of dancing and what have you. But trying to do a bit of dancing and entertain the crowd at the same time. And of course, JR puts me in my place.
Yeah, that's a very polite way of putting it.
Yeah, he does it polite, so he does, yeah.
He was there for You were there to do business was basically the gist of it, wasn't it?
He just says to me, just whispers my ear, well, son, that's some reception, wasn't it? I go, oh my God, it's unbelievable, JR. I go, you enjoying yourself? Yes, I am, JR, it's great. He goes, well, stop enjoying yourself now. You're here to do business. This is the business end of it. And, you know, he was kind of right. JR always got you back in the place and back in your feet back on the ground again.
That was a memorable night in the Ulster Hall. You know, the where the choir normally sit.
Yeah.
All those seats, it was boxing in the round, which in subsequent years was to become very popular.
Yeah.
But at that time, it was virtually unheard of here.
Yeah, it wasn't. Like I always loved, as an amateur, the Ulsters was the peak of the kind of the boxing calendar in Belfast, the old Ulster finals.
Yeah.
No, we used to go back there now because it was such a good night fight in Ulster Hall. You know, and it is, it's such a buzz having the crowd all around you from everywhere, you know. And so to get fighting in the Ulster Hall on top of the building, that's always was one of my goals set. And then obviously the next one was the kind of the even bigger version of the Ulster Hall, the King's Hall. You know what I mean?
You're talking about the amateur days in the Ulster Hall. You won that, what, the local things about 4 or 5 years in a row.
Yeah, I think five times. Maybe the senior elites, five times in a row. Yeah.
And was that at super middleweight or what weight?
They were all the same middleweight it was. There was no super middleweight as an amateur at the time, so it was middleweight 75, so 75 kilos.
Right.
And then super middleweight was 76 and a half. So I was kind of around about the same weight for maybe, I don't know, 20 years. I'm a wee bit heavier now.
I'm more
cruiserweight. Maybe if I can get down a cruiserweight.
It must be nice now, though, to be able to have a burger.
It is. Like, I was just thinking about, like, we're talking about even my last, so many fights were over Christmas. So we're maybe at the start of January, too. So I remember missing so many Christmas dinners. I would have had my Christmas dinner and no dessert because you were too busy in training. And it was hard for me to get down to 12 stone. So, like, I had to really be strict. So, like, you know, I remember so many kind of, oh, I can't wait to kind of, I would have loved to have a fight in December so you could have Christmas off, you know.
Yeah.
But they're always kind of saying, oh, you got a fight in January. It's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
When it comes to Christmas ruined again type of thing, you know. But I always made up for it after the fights. Always kind of enjoyed myself for a while and a bit of time out. So, you know, getting back in training, I could have got fit again in maybe 8 weeks. But the more I kind of enjoyed myself, next thing I was getting like Roberto Duran. I needed maybe more time to get fit again. I used to go actually towards the end of my career, I started training 4 weeks before my coach told me, right, it's time to start training again. So I would have went and got a bit fit before starting with him because, you know, the deal with the type of training I had to do for a world title fight, I went and got myself a bit fit and ready to go into training camp as well first, you know.
You were one of those guys, though, who enjoyed the training.
Yeah, I love the training. Even now, I train all the time. Like, so I like to do something every day if I could. You know, but I do. I love training. You know, my probably only downfall now is kind of I like my food as well. So I have to train and keep the balance. But yeah, I love training. It was tough now. It wasn't, even though I loved it, I have to say, like, boxing career as a professional is one tough job.
Yeah. I remember talking to some of the rugby boys and actually the Gaelic and soccer footballers.
Yeah.
Who did boxing training as part of their build-up for big games.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we thought we trained till we went in with those boxing boys.
Yeah.
They are so fit.
It is. It's an eye-opener. It has every element of fitness. You know, you need agility, you need to move. Like, funny enough, I've been lucky enough to work with the Antrim GAA team a couple of times in a couple of seasons, and they've got really massive benefit out of it. And you can see a difference when they do work with the boxing as well. Even like a confidence and an air of kind of that confidence and kind of hunger as well. It just brings out it in you. I always say, like, boxing training is for everybody, even if you're injured. And we all have it in our DNA. It just brings out that inner fighter in you, if you know what I mean. And you don't have to do it to get like to win the ring with somebody and get punched. You can do it for just fun, just the exercise and the training, and it's so popular now. It's amazing, like, you know. That's what I do for a living now. I have a gym now with boxing classes and all, and, you know, thank God it's popular. You know what I mean? I'd be out of business.
I mean, your gym is up off Kennedy Way, mm-hmm. and I was up there the other day, and behind you, there's this enormous building has been built.
Huge, yeah.
It's, I don't know what square footage it is, but
it's huge.
Yeah. But there it is, McGee Fitness.
Well that's right. Nobody can ever find my gym. But see, now I just say it's behind the big blue, beside the big place. It looks like IKEA. It's like a storage place, but it looks like IKEA. So that's our landmark to say where we are. Well, yeah, we're next door to there. You don't know where my gym is, but we're next door to there.
How many years?
I'm actually retired now, I think 13 years maybe. So I think it's 12 years we opened. I opened about a year after I retired, yeah.
Yeah.
Just couldn't stick the boredom of retirement, so I kind of opened the gym.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, it's, you know, it was a big change, big transition going in from boxing to business, but it's been good for me. So it has, like, because it's to do with boxing too. When I finished boxing, you wake up in the morning, nothing to do, you know. But the boxing's kept me involved a bit with the boxing. You know, I've worked with a couple of boxers. I like training ordinary people, if you know what I mean. I'm kind of not involved with the professional game or nothing at the minute. But you know, you never know, somewhere down the line, you know. But you see fighters coming out of the gym, people training as well, so it's good.
Do you feel, I know you have worked with some fighters locally, trained them, and do you find it's hard for you to do that if you feel they don't have the hunger that you were famous for? You were always fit, but you had that extra bit between your teeth when you got in the ring, you wanted to go for it.
No, you have to. You have to set your sights high. When you see all the good champions, say like Stephen Carr Frampton, or, you know, you can tell they want to be a world champion and they're willing to do what it takes to get in. And I think a lot of them now, you know, once, especially with social media and all too, they get such a wee taste of social media fame. You know, where we never had social media. Well, I never had social media in my day. Like before, I was going, we were sticking posters on the wall, you know, to let people know you were fighting. That's crazy compared to now. You just had a few buttons and everybody can know you're fighting. It's so easy. But back then, I think, you know, you had to have that hunger to push through session after session. And I think the fighters now coming through, they don't know what it takes, especially at world level. Like, there's different levels. You go to British level, European level, but to get the world level, it's another level up. Like, what you got to do, what you put yourself through every day in, day out. You're more or less faffing a fight every day. You know, it's tough going.
What was that experience like? Not just being a boxer, but also you won a gym, and that's a different ball game, isn't it? Towards the boxing.
It is. You know what? I sometimes think it's tougher. See, working 9 to 5, or probably when I work 9 to 9, it is tougher than the boxing game. Wish it was boxing again. The pay was a bit better when it was boxing, but and you know what? As I said, I love it because I'm still involved in boxing and sport. And when you do something you love, yes, there is hard days. When you do something you love, it's not a job as what it's worse. It'd be worse going to a job you don't like. And it's quite social. You get to meet different people every day. Like it's great to have sometimes people coming in from America. And the good thing is, go, oh, well, I used to watch you fight, and they come in for a wee training session and stuff like that there. So it's fab that way, you know. And sometimes I forget what I've done in boxing. And all of a sudden you get somebody popping in. Like, there was a guy there who popped in from Canada.
Oh, wow.
Just there the other day, and he popped in, he brought me stuff. Do you mind if I call in to sign me things and stuff like that there? And funny enough, he's going back down to his hotel. I gave him a lift down to his hotel, brought him the Freddie Gilroy statue and the peace wall. I let him see wee bits, you know, so it was nice, you know what I mean? But like, I thought coming all this way to Canada for me to sign a couple of posters and photographs and stuff like that there, at least I can do is kind of give you a lift back down to your hotel. But that doorway was really, really nice, you know.
I'm sure that, you know, not just that experience, but also it's just really nice to fight all these well-known boxers. Yeah. I'm sure that was the same thing.
It was, because see, that's one thing I thought when I was boxing as well. Like, people always say about being back home, but there were some countries I was better known in. Like, I'm better known in Denmark probably I was than I was back home, because I fought three other big superstars. Like, some Mikael Kastler, the guy who I fought last, he was like David Beckham. I know he still is in Denmark. So when you fight him, you're a household name within Denmark. And I fought three of their top boxers, you know, the three of their best kind of supermobile boxers. So, like, I was better known in Denmark than I was here. You know, and I had never had a nickname, even for boxing. But over there, they called me the Viking Slayer. Oh. That was my nickname. Right back home, I had no nickname. You know, trying to get nicknames. Talk about trying to get a song for the ring. We spent months trying to get a fight name when I first started boxing and couldn't come up with something. So, You know, one of the things was we come up with, and it's a funny story anyway. Frank Mooney, this is about three fights in, Frank Mooney had sent me over to New York to train with Lennox Lewis and Emmanuel Stewart, and Princeton Seaman was there at the time. And Lennox Lewis, on his day off, he liked to have a basketball game with everybody. So all the fighters, we were playing basketball, and it was only about like a minute to go, and it was, you know, a basket to win the game. And I remember like, next time the ball was passed to me, and I'm about 8 feet away from the net, and Lennox is beside the net going, come on, throw it to me, and everybody else is shouting, go for it, and of course I went to throw it to Lennox, and then they throw it towards, miss it, and throw it towards the basket, and actually got it in. So they were nicknaming me Lucky Charms, because back at the end of the serial, Lucky Charms. So I was thinking that could have been my nickname for boxing, but it just didn't go.
What was that feeling like when you, knowing all these people in the boxing world, like Hugh Walshall, Jim McCourt, and other people? I'm sure that's really nice experience for you to see them, to be in the boxing terms. When you were doing the boxing?
No, it is. It's humbling, you know, because most of them guys I would have looked up to, if you know what I mean. You know, I really looked up to them guys, and then to meet them and them coming over shaking your hand all too, it was very humbling and very nice. And you'll find, like, even boxing been such a, you know, not a cruel sport, but it's a tough sport as well. You know, you're getting fighting. Most of the boxers you ever meet are some of the nicest people. Most of them, you know, 9 times out of 10 are the nicest guys you'll meet, you know, and... You know, they're gentlemen outside of the ring. Inside the ring, they're pure fighters, but outside the ring, they're gentlemen. So, yeah, to have the opportunity to meet all these sports guys, and also people wanting to meet you too, it opened a lot of doors for me and got me to meet a lot of you know, famous people. It's like yourself now, James. Like, you're rubbing shoulders with, you know, heck of my day. I remember meeting Liam Neeson once, so did, but like, now I'm saying I've met you. You know what I mean? You know, you're on my list.
I'm sure that's was a really good experience, but the atmosphere going into the rain with the audience must be second to none.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it was, even, you know, it's only now when it's over. Like I used to say about going to Olympic Games, when I went to Olympic Games in America, you know, you had all the stars, especially boxing in America was so popular. I remember one day I was fighting and you had David Hasselhoff there, Bruce Willis, you had Muhammad Ali, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they were all in the crowd watching. Oh, so they were like all these big stars, you know, and walking around in America, all the big stars walking around the thing. So, but it wasn't after that we were walking around thinking, just focused on the boxing. And then afterwards, you're back here, and me, myself, and Damien Kelly would have been sitting just chilling out and then talking about it and going, geez, that was actually amazing. But at the time, it's kind of going over your head, you know. But one of my biggest memories actually from the Olympic Games was Muhammad Ali getting his medal. I don't know if you kind of recall when Muhammad Ali was came back from the Olympics, he couldn't get served in a restaurant back home in Louisville, Kentucky. And he was so annoyed having his medal, he went out and threw it in the river. And Atlanta,
he would just keep it.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He was just so annoyed, thinking this medal's not getting me anywhere, any respect, so he threw it in the river. So then the next thing in Atlanta, they give him his medal back. They give him a new medal, and he lit the flame. And it was quite emotional because me and Damien were at the crowd. We were fighting 2 days later. But just to see that as a boxer, Evander Holyfield, who's from Atlanta, he gave him the torch, passed it to Ali, and then he lit it and all. So being a boxer at those games, I think was fantastic for me. Anyway, that was my best memories from the Atlanta games. But it's spectacular. But yeah, as the crowd's getting in the ring and hearing your name cheered, it's amazing. But it does leave a void. That's what I'm saying. When you retire, when I retired, it did leave a void. Getting up, where all my focus used to be training. Even if I wasn't training for a fight, I was kind of probably doing family stuff or enjoying myself before I had to go and start training for another fight, doing that type of way. So all of a sudden, I have nothing to do. I had to go, what am I going to do here? So I was lucky enough, I had already started doing wee fitness classes and stuff like that there, and I had a big interest in that there. And always, it was a dream of me to always open my own gym. And thankfully, through boxing, it allowed me to kind of have the money to go and do that, you know, which is very tough.
I'm sure that Tom would... Your gym, I'm sure it was a different experience when you own the gym, but you see, when you own boxing, it's a different ball game when you own a gym,
yeah.
And getting all these people in, it's just amazing.
It's been good for me, but it is totally, see, the business end of it, the admin end of it. Geez, I have a mountain of letters in the car, haven't been opened, probably a year old. I get shared that all the time. Next thing, of course, there are always bills. These bills, that is about 5 or 6 months late, getting all these phone calls to the gym. But that's the one part, actually, being a boxer, I'm not used to. See, getting in training people and doing the boxing end of it and stuff like that there, I love it, and it's no problem at all. But see, the admin end of, like, paying all the bills and making sure your electricity stays turned on and stuff like that. That's the hard part. But yeah, I find myself very lucky to have a wee connection with the boxing and the gym going. A lot of people I know have boxed for years and gotten nothing out of it. You always hear the success stories, people bought their life in boxing, their life in sport. But, you know, sometimes it's at the end when you finish boxing life, it's expensive to live every year. So to have something out, get something out of the sport and get something out of boxing, it's good.
And what can you say to young people to get into boxing?
Oh, I'd be one of the advocates for it. It's so good for anybody can do it. You know what I mean? Not to be a boxer. You know, there's all different levels. You can do it for fun. It's the best fun you can have, the best type of training. If you're, as I say, there's so many sportsmen do boxing because it's a great way to cross-train. I think it just brings out the benefit. It benefits everything. You know what I mean? A bit of move. If you're a sports player, like a football player, it'll help your footwork, it'll help your hands, your eye-hand coordination. If you're just somebody, you know, just a normal member of the public, you know what I mean? You'll hopefully lose a few pounds, get fitter. You're learning a new skill as well. You know, it's not like you're just going doing stuff in the same old, but, you know, if you come to my gym, we try to teach you a bit of boxing with a bit of skill, why you're doing things, why you're firing the jab, why you're moving your head this way, why you're rolling. So you're learning a new skill, plus you're getting fit at the same time. You know what I mean? Plus it's so much fun as well, and it doesn't hurt. You don't get punched in the face if you come to my gym. You know what I mean? You can sign up for something that you can't get punched, like a white collar. We do a charity white collar, but for now, you know, it's all the benefits of boxing without the pain.
I actually remember one particular day, and you were off these, because when you were in training, the ice fingers, and me and Dad was loving it. And I actually remember you going, "Oh no, guys, what are you doing to me?" You know, yeah, type thing. But it was really lovely just to have them. But I'm sure that killed you because of the fitness and the boxing, yeah, you know, really.
Well, that was the worst part. The worst part is having to kind of control your food and your diet, making the weight and stuff like that there, and things you couldn't do. You had to kind of sacrifice. That's the sacrifices in sport. And that makes the difference between a champion and not getting anywhere. You know, you had to sacrifice. Like, even when I was boxing to be a world champion, like, even family and my kids, everything came second. Boxing came first. Do you know what I mean? And that's where you kind of need somebody who knows that. So, like, birthdays, going out, going to the cinema, going to the movies and all, that came twice. If I had to go training, if I had to do this here, that all came first. Everything came second. But yes, when there was times when the family came first as well. After, once you finished the fight, everything changed. But, you know, when you're training for a world title and, you know, the other guy's training as hard as you, everything has to come second, and you have to kind of just focus on that there. And watching your weight is just, it's just so tough because you're doing so much training. You're training twice a day, and you're trying to not eat as well and cut down your calories. When I was boxing, there's so much science behind it now out there. Like, you know, you just have to go on Instagram and you can find all these things out about trying to lose weight and stuff like that there, where, like, some myself, you're just kind of, there wasn't too many professionals about here that knew too much about it. So you're trying to find information yourself and do it yourself. And that's probably the one thing I would change about my career, would be learning better, knowing better now how to kind of keep my weight balanced in between. My big thing was, it was okay making the weight, but then in between I had blew up because probably just going and enjoying myself too much, where if I had a bit more control in between, you know, it really just make you, it just makes life far easier when you go back into training camp. And as I said there, I had to go back into training camp 4 weeks early. I was probably to lose a bit extra weight before I started, you know, getting into serious training, you know.
I actually remember a story my dad told me, but the reaction of my mother when she was going to one of your fights. And I think the reaction of that wasn't too pretty anyway. Really? But I'm sure it was really fun just to have a fight back home, just to make it more easy, simple, get the experience, and that's what you really want.
Yeah. Really. Oh, definitely. I mean, I was unlucky. I kind of one of my nicknames was kind of the Road Warrior. I always had to travel away to my fights. I had signed with promoters from England and stuff, but for some reason, boxing wasn't, like, they had a heyday here when Boy McGuigan, you always hear about the good old days when Boy McGuigan was here, and they had kind of went away. So kind of when I started fighting again, there was no fights back here, and we kind of tried to build it up, but most of my fights had to be abroad. And lucky enough for Sky TV, I just started fighting on Sky TV. But even then, I think there was only about maybe 300 to 3,000 houses only had Sky TV when back then when I was fighting. It wasn't that popular the way it is now. Everybody seems to have Sky TV. But, you know, back then it was a struggle at the start. So you had to go and get PR everywhere else. And then, as I say, when you come home, you had to, lucky we had the likes of Ivan there, like, you know, working for UTV and all the time. And you were always giving us a plug and helping us. And we had the press and all as well, tortured.
Well, you're talking there about traveling, and you did do a lot of traveling. I mean, you fought a lot of times in Denmark, you fought in Canada, and so on. But the one fight, when I heard you were doing it, I said to Pat McGee, Pat, nobody from here ever gets a result out there. Brian's going to have to knock this guy out. And Pat said, it'll be fine. Don't worry, it'll be fine. And that was when you went to Costa Rica.
Costa Rica, yeah, Jesus, that was some trip, yeah. We went to Panama first for a training camp.
Yeah.
My coach was from Panama, but I swear, never again. It kind of put me off sunny holidays for a while because it was so, it was unbelievably hot. We worked training this gym called the Devil's Cauldron. And see, the last day of sparring, we were for 3 weeks training, and then we went for a week in Costa Rica before the fight. But when we were in Panama, it was just so hot. Like, after 3 rounds, I have photographs, I'm just drenched, and you're drained. But on the last day of sparring, I ended up getting my nose broke. One of the guys, I sparring these couple of world champions from Panama, and one of them broke my nose. And you can say, kind of say it was an accident, but it kind of was an accident, but I was just so tired anyway, just fell onto an uppercut, as you do. But I had to get my nose cauterized then before the fight, because the aircon in there, getting into the cold, you had to kind of stay in as much as you could. Every time I sniffled a lot, the nose started to bleed. So I had to get a cortisone before that fight. But then we traveled down to Costa Rica, another plane ride down to there as well. But it was spectacular. You had likes of Don King and all too. But yeah, I always knew I was up against it. No other champion wanted to take that challenge on, and I took it on. So the whole thing was to go down and get the belt and then move on from there.
You got it.
So got it, yeah. It was tough. Yeah. I tell you what, it was tough. It was hard-earned, but it was worth it.
Well, they say that boxing is brilliant for giving people discipline, right? And all the things you've talked about there, particularly the food intake, iron discipline required for that. But it also teaches discipline in other areas. So I don't know how many fights it was into your professional career. I get a phone call and I'm told you're going to Liverpool, Everton Leisure Complex. Brian is fighting the world champion Raymond Brites,
right,
from Argentina,
yeah,
right? And JR and Pat and all are talking to me on the day of the fight, and it's all, Brian knows what he's doing. He has a game plan here. He's going in. He's going to sign this guy out for 4 or 5 rounds, and then he'll start getting more proactive. And this guy won't be able to live with him. He's trained for 12 rounds. This guy will not last 12 rounds. So I'm sitting there ringside. The two of you come out. The fight isn't 30 seconds old. And Raymond Brites is in the center of the ring with you. And he hits you the most unmerciful dig in the head. And you react. And you then start beating 7 bells out of him.
Yeah.
And the two of you are giving it the full message in the middle of the ring, round one.
Yeah.
And your corner and his corner are screaming at the two of you to back off,
yeah,
to settle down, boys. You know, it's this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the round finishes, and you go in, you sit down on the thing, and Pat and JR are there, and they're giving it the whole thing, and it's all this, you know. And I'm looking over at the other boy, and the Argentinians are saying to him, whatever, right?
Still 11 rounds to go.
Yeah, 11 rounds to go.
A long way.
Out you go, and it's all nice and gentle and picking shots and things.
Yeah.
Second round. Then towards the end of the round, bang, he hits you, he catches you again, and you're back at him, and ding, and you both go to the corner. And there's a guy sitting with me, Dominic Murray, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says to me, there is no way this fight is going 12 rounds. You come out in the next round, and you're straight after Brites. Yeah. You're not hanging about. And I see Pat and JR going. You were going for it, and it was just, you know, the red mist had descended, as they say. Yeah. Is that how you remember it, or do you think it was measured? And
no, it wasn't. It's a bit of a red mist, because what happens in them situations is once you feel the opportunity, you don't want to let it go. And I think at that stage, I'd caught him a good shot, and then you kind of sense a weakness, or you sense something wrong. Or, like, you know, I always said you had to have a good poker face in boxing too, because once you hit somebody, and even if it twitched and you knew it hurt them, it was like a, you know, like a red flag to a bull. I would just be on you all the time. Mm-hmm. And that'd give me confidence, where if somebody's poker face does not, you know, you think, I'm working so hard here and this guy's not hurting. So the good pros were tough that way. But no, once I seen him react and I'd hurt him a bit, that was me then. But all guns blazing and away and kind of away I went. And it was like anything too. Young as well in my pro career, we are kind of not thinking about the other 11 rounds I had to do. You know,
yeah.
I was just like, right, I've an opportunity here, get him out of the ring, because I'd done all the training. Like, no matter what, I was always confident in the ring because I'd done all my training beforehand. So I was never getting in thinking, God, I'm only going to be fit enough for 6 rounds here. What am I going to do when it goes into the second half of a fight? I always knew I could do 12 rounds, but, you know, probably not at that pace. So once I knew the opportunity was there, you just kind of went into autopilot, and the way you kind of went, try to get them out of there as quick as you can. Mike Tyson says you don't get paid for overtime.
No. Is that the best moment of your career because it got you a world title, or was it just a stepping stone along the way?
No, that was a stepping stone. I think one of my best ones for me anyway was Mads Larsson. He was like 40 wins, one defeat or something like that there. And he was like, I was like 1-20 to win. You had to put 20 quid on to win £1 or something. He was such a big favourite, and I ended up stopping him. But before that, the whole history was as well, I was about to lose my house and everything. You know, I was kind of off not fighting for about a year and a half, and I kind of spent all my money. So I had, and I remember going to the bank before I knew about that fight. I was going to the bank. I've told the story many times where I went to the bank to ask for a loan of 10 grand. They wouldn't give me it. So when they said you haven't got enough money yet, I kind of had a nice house and all and stuff like that there. So next thing, I went back that day, and it was like somebody's looking after me. I got a phone call from Denmark saying, I do want to fight for European title. I was like, yeah. I didn't ask him for much fur. And he goes, right, I'll give Pat McGee a ring here and get speaking to him. And he goes, right, happy days. And then the rest was history. So it was. But I was making sure it was another chance for me to kind of relight my career, and I made sure I kind of won that fight. But that was kind of the most satisfying for me because of the background and what was on the line. Do you know what I mean? But that was another one. Once I knew I had Mads Larsson, I had him a body shot. And once I seen him wince, no matter what, I was kind of going for him no matter what the whole time.
Was Larsson the best you ever fought, or would that have been the Canadian guy, Boutte? Oh,
so many. Boutte was good. Mikhail Kester, I still think, was the best I'd ever fought. Card Frotch was probably one of the toughest. So right. He was. Card Frotch is just so durable. You know, you could hit him with a piece of iron, and he was just always there, and he couldn't get back. And one of the mistakes I made against Card Frotch was I let him talk me into the fight. I thought I was just edging the fight, and I let him be mouthy. He's mouthing the whole way through the fight, so he was. And he was probably the only fighter. I was never really a mouther. No, before the fight, talking trash talk. And Card Frotch was one of the ones who kind of got me into that a wee bit. And there was a bit of a needle between the two of us. And I didn't really like him that much, and he probably didn't like me. But I let him draw me into the fight, and of course he caught me a big uppercut. And even another funny story after that, the person I don't like, and the one boxer I didn't like, so when I kind of retired or thought I've had enough of boxing, I kind of bought myself this big expensive holiday. So I did, me and the kids and the family go on holiday, walk into this big fancy 5-star hotel. He was the first person I'd seen. Carr Fratch. I was just checking in too. And I was kind of hoping, oh, fuck, there's Carr Fratch. Hopefully he's just checking out. And then he goes, no, I'm just checking in. It was like kind of, it was kind of a stir down for a while. Yeah. I didn't know who was kind of, right, what are we going to say here? What are we going to do? And I ended up spending the week together, and he was really nice. Really became quite friendly with each other. So with it.
Was he from Nottingham?
He was Nottingham, yeah.
Yeah, and who was the Welsh guy who you were meant to fight, but it didn't happen?
That was Joe, the great Joe Calzaghe. Yeah. That was like the day after St. Patrick's Day, we were meant to fight him. We went in the ring as well, and then kind of the excuse was that he just went and signed a big contract to fight again in Germany for like 1.6 million or something like that there. So the rules of boxing, if you had serious signed a contract, you couldn't fight that fight and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think his training all wasn't going well. He kind of looked a bit drained the weight. I was probably, if any opportunity to beat Joe Calzaghe, I think that was the best opportunity for anybody. Not only that I was fighting him, but like he would be one of my favourite fighters too. To go unbeaten in his career, you have to hand it to him. He's a great, great, great fighter, you know. So, even to go through that, even the way in and all with him was fantastic for me as well. But yeah, just a pity the fight didn't go ahead.
There was a guy, now he wouldn't have had the quality of the Danes or of Calzaghe or Frotch. Frotch was frustratingly awkward. He must have been, left thing out all the time.
Long arms and rangy.
Yeah. But for me, the hardest man you ever fought, I couldn't believe how durable he was. Robin Reed,
yeah, he was a cracker, so he was, yeah. Robin Reed was very, very tough.
Like, I was ringside, right? Mm-hmm. And when people beside me in the press area weren't saying, Ivan, isn't that your wife giving the referee a hard time on the far side there? Suzanne's up and all this stuff, you know.
The first round.
But Robin Reed, you hit him with a combination of punches that would have stopped a train, and he didn't flinch.
Yeah, he was super strong and super shape. Even now, you look at him, he got himself in such good shape now, even. And Robin would be a good 5 or 6 years old, be in his 50s now, probably. Mm. But he's down to his fighting weight. He looks in great shape. And I have actually became friends with Robin Reed.
Yeah.
And spent a couple of days out in Lanzarote with him. So I did. And he's a great guy, so he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had a hard career. Brilliant career as well, but a tough career as well. Tough path too. Yeah. He deserves to get a lot more out of boxing, so he did. But he was a hard man.
There used to be a guy from here who... how long ago this was, he was the British and Empire super middleweight champion, Peter Sharp.
Right, I've heard that name. So
Peter lived around the corner from me, mm-hmm. right? And in later life, we worked together because I was doing the clubs and Peter was supervising on the door.
Right.
But he had a brother who had fought out of the same boxing club down the Loney, right?
Mm.
And Joe was as hard as nails, right? And Joe one night was doing the door in a club and he wouldn't let this guy in. And the guy turned round to walk away and he lifted a chair and he turned round and smashed it over Joe's head.
Jeez.
And then he looked on quite reasonably in sheer terror as Joe grabbed him and held him there with one hand and was brushing the chair off himself.
He was tough.
The other, right? And he said to him the memorable line, "See you, Squire, you're batting on a juice."
Right.
Right. But I thought to myself, Robin Reed was that guy.
If you hit
him with a chair, he would have gone. He was just so
chiseled and solid.
Chiseled is the word. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. He's like a statue.
Yeah, he was.
Super strong, even inside. Yeah, he was a great fighter. I admired Robin Reid before I even fought him. He was one of the boxers I actually liked watching as well, because he would have been on kind of Sky TV, as I say. He was a few years older than me. When I fought him, he was kind of coming to his end of his career. And I remember that fight. I remember Pat sending me, we were getting a fight because we were trying to build up the following of the King's Hall. And that was only like 8 weeks after I just fought Haseen Sharifi in the King's Hall.
Right.
And I just booked a holiday afterwards to go to Disneyland. It was Disneyland America. So I just went to Disneyland enjoying myself. And I got a phone call, right, you're fighting in 7 weeks. And I goes, whoa.
Yeah.
I'm still on holiday here. And, I've, you know, as I say, I've put on X amount of weight as well when I come back. You know, you wouldn't believe how much weight a boxer can put on between weights, especially once you're getting down to weight. I'd put on maybe about a stone and a half, near two stone. So I had, and then when I come home, and then of course, then they said it was against Robin Reid. I was like, hold on a minute, I can't be fighting here in 7 weeks' time, especially against Robin Reid. I need more time to prepare. But anyway, it kind of went ahead as well, and I'd kind of got back into shape pretty quick and made the weight early. But then I think I made the weight too early, made a mistake making the weight too early, and then by the time it came to winning the scales, I kind of I went up again, then tried to have to take it back off again, and kind of left myself a bit weakened. So it wasn't the best. For me, it wasn't a good performance for me. Like, I wasn't happy as always. Very weak. And when you're weak in a state of making a weight, you can kind of, you don't take punches very well. And Robin Reid put me down, I don't know if it was the first round or the second round. You know, I think that's how hard he hit me. I can't even remember which round he put me down on. So it was. But I got up anyway, and I kind of finished the fight. But yeah, I remember from the fourth round, I had no energy left. And I was like, oh my God, I'm kind of drained here. But I was just making the weight long. But I remember going, I wish he could have had a proper like 3 month training camp. And then when I became champion and more champion, I got more control of when I want to fight. I would always say, listen, it has to be 12 weeks notice, or if I was in shape, maybe 8 weeks notice. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't want to win. You can't go into the boxing ring not prepared, because that's how you get hurt.
When we knew you were coming in here, I was going through your fights, and
You know more about my fights than I do, even about you, either.
I said to James, this is like a soundtrack of my life.
Yeah.
It's, you know, all these. And, you know, the time we went to Nuremberg.
Oh, yeah. That was a trip as well. It was a hard trip, too. They put us out in the middle of nowhere in the ring. And the travel and the fights. All the tactics of the day, these promoters. You know, putting you in the first hotel from where the weigh-in is and the arena is in the ring. Yeah, but that was a tough fight as well.
Yeah. It was a tough fight, but it was a great experience.
It was, yeah.
There's no.
I should have won that fight to get beaten a split decision in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, you were robbed.
Yeah.
But in Germany, what can you do? Like, you know, you kind of get a pat in the back and you go off. But yeah, that was a tough night.
Before we're gonna have to wrap up shortly, but I know you're itching to ask a question, so be my guest.
I take it with those long flights going away. I know that I've did a lot of long flights to myself, but did you get into that routine of going and back, or did you have to prepare yourself?
No, I actually did. You know what? I loved at the stage then, I loved fighting away. I hated fighting at home. Fighting at home was so much hassle for me. You had people wanting to, you know, because you were more available to people. They get their views and all, and they were kind of wanting a bit of you, even for tickets. Can we get tickets to the fight and all, and blah, blah, blah. Where I love going away, because you got away, checked in the fancy hotel. You know, you get treated well because you were the guest of the other promoters and all, so it was fantastic. The only thing I didn't like about travelling on the way over was I couldn't eat anything in the plane. The long flight, James, no food, no nothing, no drink, maybe a sip of water. The only one I got kind of something was when I went to Montreal. We went out a good few weeks, and the time of the training camp were a few weeks before, so you're able to kind of eat. But like, I remember, like, if you fought in the UK, you were flying over, like, you're flying over ready to weigh in and stuff like that there, so you weren't eating anything. But European flights were the same as well. You had to kind of watch your weight over, but on the way home, you kind of could enjoy yourself, you know.
I used to like it when you fought away as well, because
holiday for everybody.
I was usually. There would be me and maybe one other journalist there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd be doing it for loads of people.
Oh.
And because you and I were friends, I could, you know, you could do a press conference, but I would go up to your room afterwards and do something different, you know.
And the thing was, you maybe came out the same day as me. So say you went out on a Wednesday, yeah. And you were there for 5 days. Yeah. So you enjoyed yourself for 5 days, but then they always booked the flight home the next day after the fight.
Yeah.
So I never got to see anywhere or do anything, and everybody's going, oh, that was the best time ever, the greatest time ever. And I'm going, what, really, was it? I'm glad you all enjoyed yourself. I got the fight and then have breakfast in the hotel and then go home again. You know, people think you're away here and are enjoying yourself, but you don't get to do that much when you're away because you're focusing on training. Until, like, even when I go away, when I went to kind of Denmark before the fight, you're still training twice a day. You know what I mean? Stuff like that there, getting your training in and you're focusing on the fight until it's only after the next day. You're free, totally free to do what you want.
Quickly, best moment and worst moment of your career?
Best moment, probably meeting Muhammad Ali in Louisville, Kentucky, and winning the gold medal in the World Championship there. Mm-hmm. On the worst part, the worst part, any defeat was very hard to take, like, so it was, because in boxing it is snakes and ladders. I always say snakes and ladders. Once you're defeated, you kind of get used in boxing. You're put away back down the list, so you are, and then you're used. Like, I remember fighting, say you're fighting, you could be fighting for 100 grand, so you could 100 grand, but then the next paycheck, oh, you could beat there, next thing you're fighting for 4. You know, and that's the kind of, that was kind of one of the kind of ones that was hard, you know, going from, because you had all these plans. Whenever you had a title, yeah. You were doing, like, say you were doing that there, you might have bought yourself a house, and then all of a sudden you're going, oh, well, hold on a minute, I'm back down to this kind of paycheck again. So it's tough that way, but yeah, kind of any defeat would be the kind of worst. The worst probably defeat that I was kind of thought was, well, Carfax one was probably hard to take, because it was a great fight. I thought I was edging it, and I was just unlucky. I thought, you know what I mean? And kind of a lot of things didn't go in my favour before the fight, like getting the venue and all. I didn't want the venue and things like that there. But, you know, I always wasn't one to cry about things. It's all, well, you have to just get on with things. And, like, you know, it was never superstition. That's why I stayed away from superstition and all too, because, you know, if something had went right, you go, oh, I haven't got my lucky socks here and all. So I stayed away from all there and just, like, whatever happened. My main goal was just get in the ring and be able to fight. So whatever happened before that, didn't matter, you know what I mean? Just had to keep getting on with things.
When I looked at it this week, the overriding thing, and I said this to you, James.
You did, yeah.
Was, you know, what a career. It was brilliant career.
Oh, and, thank you so much, thank you.
You know, also a long career, Brian.
I know, I didn't realise I had so many fights and in such a space of time. And I think I maybe had 26, 12-round title fights. In total, was just somebody sending me actually the other day, and I couldn't actually believe it. I was going, God. And that's the kind of wee things, moments like this here, interviews and stuff, brings things back. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of go, you kind of be proud of yourself then, where before you're kind of going, oh, career's over. I'd love to be fighting again too. But then it's only when you kind of take a bit of stock and remember then, go, oh, you know what, you did all right. You know, it wasn't too bad, and you had a good career. Plenty of good memories. Well, everybody else had good memories.
Yeah.
I just remember going fighting and coming home.
Never mind about the fry, huh?
Yeah, I know. That was my biggest prize, the fry.
Yeah, well.
I'll never forget the time, European title, actually, the fight, one of the European title, that fight. I couldn't sleep, and everybody else are out drunk and everything. I remember getting up that morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, there was nobody else awake. Nobody was trying to text people, are you coming down by myself? Waiting at the restaurant for the hotel to open to get my fry. So I got a fry. I got 2 fries that morning. I got one at 6 o'clock and then one again when everybody else woke up about 10 o'clock.
Yeah. No, it was great time. And it's great that you showed that you had the wherewithal to make it work for you afterwards, yeah. Where you started the gym. The gym's going now. Well over a decade, yeah. It's trundling along nicely for you. So, yeah. Lovely to have Brian in, James.
Yeah, so it's very lovely, and thanks for coming.
Thank you so much, James. Good to see you again.
It's good to see you.
And as they say,
good to see James back soon again with the boxing gloves on too. You loved the boxing training, didn't you?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, it was really nice. Well, it'd be nice to put it back on the green.
Well, as they say, we'll see you all of a sudden.
Well, indeed. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.